There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Arab World, discovering the region's best stories.
What are we talking about today on Arab World, man?
So today we are talking about a very fascinating literary figure in the Arab world who I have always heard of, and I think many Arabs might have heard of her name but don't know much about her. Her name is May Zaidi, or May Zaida. So she was a key Lebanese-Palestinian figure in the Arab literary scene in the early 20th century. She was a part of a very important movement called the Nahda. The Nahda was a sort of like a renaissance or a sort of a cultural awakening that happened in the Arab world that started in Cairo. And she was sort of like a key figure of that. So she was born in 1886 in what is now Palestine to a Lebanese father and a Palestinian mother. And her family moved to Cairo, Egypt, when she was, I think, about 17. And at that time, Egypt was sort of the cultural hub of the Arab world. It was where all the great Arab writers and poets and thinkers were living. And she's fascinating because, first of all, she was an only child, and her father was an editor of a very famous newspaper. And her mother, even though was quote-unquote, you know, uneducated, in the sense that she didn't have a formal education, she had memorized so much Arab poetry. And so May could have grew up in this house full of writers and thinkers, and she was, like I said, an only child. And she was always in conversation with adults. And so she didn't have that sort of typical, you know, childhood upbringing where she was with a lot of other children. And she was a prolific reader. And she was also very, very good and natural at learning languages. So she spoke like six languages: Arabic, English, French, German, had a working knowledge of Latin and Spanish. And so by the time she was 17, she was a lot more cultural, a lot more aware of language and poetry. She had a fascination with poetry that was happening in Europe and America, and she was very aware of the movements happening there. And so she wasn't sort of your typical teenager. And so when she moved to Egypt with her family, she had these very Western or liberated ideas about life and about writing and about culture, but they didn't sort of match up with the society that she was living in, especially being a woman. And so from the age of 18, she was writing periodicals and articles for her father's newspaper, but she didn't sound like a novice or a beginner. She already had this pool of knowledge behind her. But it wasn't until she attended university that she had this sort of awakening where she realized that there would be no true equality between the classes and between society in the Arab world until women were given equal measure in education and they were seen as equals to men. And so that really became her driving sort of force in all her work, which is to really promote education for women. She wrote, one of the major things she did as well is translate a lot of novels from German and Spanish and English into Arabic. And that was one of the first times anyone had translated works from the West into the Middle East into Arabic. And it sort of added this new facet in Arab literature where people hadn't been reading as much of modern novels from the West. And so she was really key in translating those works. The reason why I think the Arab world is really fascinated by her is because she wasn't your typical sort of activist out there on the street, you know, gunning for women to get rights. She was sort of like a woman of letters. She wrote a lot about women, wrote a lot about education in a way that was very convincing. And she had she became a bit of a celebrity in literary circles, and she had a very, I suppose, tragic life. She passed away when she was 55, which is quite young, but she left a huge legacy. One of the greatest legacies she left was actually she organized these literary saloons that lasted for, I think, about 20 years, which were weekly, and a lot of the great thinkers and writers of the time were attending those. And she was known to be a great mediator. So when everything would get too heated between different writers or different thinkers, she was the one who was sort of like keeping the peace between everyone. And what's also interesting about her, there's so much interesting things about her, is that she never married. And a lot of people find this to be quite odd, is that she never married. Yeah.
Man, you've been telling us a bit about May Zaida.
Yep.
And
about what an incredible figure she is in Arabic literature. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite new to her. I was kind of finding out more because I knew that you'd be discussing her. Mm-hmm. And what fascinated me about her is the kind of complexities, because on the one hand, I read that she was educated in a French convent school. And so she had this love for French literature, romantic literature, and all those kind of romantic ideals that that will give to a person. But then she seemed to live this almost loveless life in terms of the physical sense, because her relationship was one with someone she'd never met.
Yeah, her relationship was with Khalil Gibran, which I think most people have heard of, the Lebanese-American writer and artist and philosopher who lived in the States for most of his life. And they developed this, you know, 19-year-long correspondence where they were sort of in love, but they had never met. And it sort of also reflects other parts of her life where, you know, she was, lots of many men, many great writers and thinkers had sort of developed feelings for her, but she never reciprocated. She was never sort of interested. And it's because it goes back again to the fact that she was so idealistic,
yes,
about literature and about love, and that she never really was never... Her feet were never really fully planted on the ground.
I can understand that. I can remember as a teenager, you sort of go through this phase, yeah, where from a British perspective, it would be things like Wuthering Heights and, yeah, all these things with these Byronic romantic men, and real men, when you meet them, it's like, oh. And so I wonder if there is this state that if you read that much, yeah, and if you read this kind of utopian, idealized love relationship, is it possible to find real life love?
I think it's completely true. And I think that is, you know, partly to do with May's sort of like mentality. Even the first collection of poetry she released in French, she released them under a pseudonym, Isis Copia. She wasn't even interested in the idea of fame or the idea of being well known for her writing. She was happy to continue writing books and under pseudonyms so that the work would stand for itself,
yes,
as opposed to her being this, you know, part of this central part of the work. She was happy to remove herself, give, you know, to relate to this idea of the work sort of speaking for itself.
Yeah, yeah, she wanted, yeah, books for book's sake,
exactly,
not for anything else.
Which is great, but in a way, I don't like that, because I feel like she's sort of forgotten. And I think a lot of time in history, she has been forgotten. I mean, lots of her work hasn't been translated into English. A lot of her Arabic writing, she's written a lot of biographies about other female writers. She wrote a lot of periodicals about Arab poets and Arab activists, female activists. And she even organized a massive conference called The Goal of Life, which, you know, pushed Arab women to explore Western freedom without forgetting their Arab identity, which, yeah, is so ahead of her time, you know, at the 1921, that conference was, which is,
yeah, yeah,
which
that's
is
phenomenal,
fascinating. Yeah. And she's a great person to look up if you're interested in Arab literature, because she's a gateway to all these other Arab writers that she wrote about and discussed. So she's sort of like an encyclopedia to the great Arab thinkers of the time.
When doing the research and research about the literary salon that she, yeah, ran, you kind of get all these other names and you just,
exactly,
think, oh, I have to look up all of these other people and find out, because it sounded like such a fascinating time to,
exactly,
be and a place to be in those discussions that are happening.
And all those names that you're reading were revolutionaries in their own way, but she was sort of the person who linked them all up together. Actually, if you Google her name, there's a great 1-hour YouTube documentary by Al Jazeera in English, and it sort of tells you a lot about her life. I really highly recommend everyone just go on the Al Jazeera YouTube channel and read that, watch that. There's also a book about her and Khalil Gibran's letters, which is called, I have the name right here, it's called Love Letters, The Love Letters of Khalil Gibran to May Zayda. They're all his letters to her, because her letters were never released from her by her family to the public. So it's a really fascinating read to see their relationship.
It is. And also the her own life was quite tragic in many,
yeah,
ways. And,
yeah,
then you have this thing, she had depression,
she had depression.
A psychiatric,
yeah,
hospital.
Well, the last years of her life, her parents both passed away. When Khalil Gibran passed away as well, she was very, very devastated.
Yeah, it all happened at the
it
same time.
It all happened
time,
within, like, I think a matter of 3 years. And she went back to Lebanon from Cairo to sort of recuperate. But rumor has it that her extended family didn't like her really extreme feminist ideas and sort of put her in a mental asylum so she could, you know, recover from these crazy ideas.
Yeah,
but
yeah, it's quite common.
It's quite
globally,
common at that time.
For women,
yeah,
with strong opinions.
At that
right,
time.
Let's lock them up.
And I think they also wanted to take control of her property that was left to her by her family. So she stayed there for, I'm not actually sure, I think maybe a year, but she ended up receiving papers to prove that she wasn't, you know, mentally not stable, and was released and went back to Cairo and kind of was a bit of a recluse the last few years of her life.
That's so sad.
It is really sad. But she left behind like 15 books about translation and essays and poetry. And she's been recognized in Lebanon. There's a street named after her as well. So it's quite sad. I think people are just fascinated with this kind of like celebrity tragic life that she led.
She translated Arthur Conan Doyle, didn't
yep,
she?
Yeah, she did.
That was interesting.
To Arabic, yeah.
I think we need to spend longer talking about her on a future show because she sounds utterly fascinating.
Yeah, I want to find out more.
I'm trying to get some of her work translated. If there's any translators out there who's interested in translating Arabic work, please get a hold of me. I'm trying to get some of her work translated into English and published. So
4001 is the text line if you want to answer man's call. Rachel, you remember mentioning earlier about how romantic stories like Wuthering Heights and those kinds of books somehow ruin
kind
you.
Of Byron and Shelley and that sort of proper romantic poet.
The kind of ruin relationships for you in a way. And I just wondered if there's anybody listening who had a similar experience with something that they read, because it is interesting when you read something that is so far removed from your own reality that it's almost depressing in a way and it kind of puts you off relationships forever.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.